Galesburg's Morning News.
Good morning. It is 8:16. Galesburg's Morning News, 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. Tom Meredith, Jim Lee, Tyler Bachman. So it's not every day you talk to somebody who just took a trip to Cuba. Well, Cuba, Illinois, and Havana, Illinois, but also the country of Cuba, as we welcome in the owners of Munson Hybrids, John and Holly Hennepin. Good morning. Thanks for coming in today. Oh, wait a minute. Let me push buttons properly. What am I missing here? Try it again.
Good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
Here we go. Three fingers at once. I thought I'd already pushed them. All right. So it was kind of funny. You heard me ask Tyler if he'd ever been even to Cuba, Illinois, or Havana, Illinois, and you recently were there too, right?
Yes. We were in Cuba and Havana on Sunday. So, yeah.
But, so compare and contrast the two.
Oh, well.
They're spelled the same.
Difference. Yeah, there you go. I don't know. Having been through both of those communities, I don't know. Is there really that much difference?
I always thought Cuba, Illinois was a little backwards, but yeah. I got a feeling.
Yeah.
They're right. Modern compared to what you're going to tell us.
They are.
Well, let's talk about the trip. Holly, you were saying that initially you were going to be taking an anniversary trip and going to Ireland, and
Yes. Plans
kind of got changed a little bit.
Oh, no, we did the Ireland trip.
Oh, you actually did? But, oh, my goodness.
Right. Yeah.
Are you over the jet lag yet then?
Just thinking about it now, I think.
It's nice to be home.
Yeah, very nice.
I bet. So how did the Cuba trip come about?
Well, we're members of the Independent Professional Seed Association, IPSA. And IPSA really put this trip together as an opportunity for member companies and support people to the seed industry to go down and just kind of see where they're at in their agriculture and look at opportunities that people in our industry could go into Cuba and, primarily contra-seasonal production, produce seed in the wintertime, do purity grow-outs, maybe some breeding work, those types of things. But, before you can do that, you got to find out what's there and what you have to work with. And that's really kind of where we're at. The group, there's about 18 of us, several, seed companies like us. There were some research companies. There were HR companies, just kind of a wide gamut of the industry that were there to see where they might be able to fit into some opportunities if they existed. And then, I think everybody that was on the trip also had that desire to want to see Cuba. So, I mean, that factored into it as well, for everybody.
Mm. I know, John, several administrations ago, George Ryan, the then Illinois governor, went down there, so much talked about, because there hadn't been much of, there was no trade. It was more just an exploratory thing, and they'd hoped that trade might develop. I don't think anything really substantial has ever really developed, though, has it?
No, I'm the leader of our group, Paul Johnson. He's actually been, his company actually started by importing food into Cuba. So, that's kind of a misunderstanding, and I don't understand it fully, but it's not so much that you can't do trade, you just can't trade in dollars. And they have no credit, they have no money to be able to pay for stuff. So, the big block is their lack of financial support to be able to pay for stuff now that some of these trades have opened. Food could always be imported because of humanitarian conditions, but they just didn't have the money to pay for it. So, it's not that goods can't go there. It's just that it can't be traded in the Cuban dollar. That part of it, the Treasury Department, is really kind of the big block of preventing the trade.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what both of you, anytime you go anywhere different, you have a preconceived idea of what you're going to see and then the reality of it.
Yep.
Tell us, kind of compare and contrast those things.
Do you want to do more the social, the non-agriculture part, Holly, and then I'll talk
ag. That's good. Well, most of people's impression when we talked to said that, they're poor people, they're downtrodden, they're under submission of many different types of democracy, of dictatorship, and so forth. We got there, and you couldn't tell anybody was different than you and I. They dress the same. They have some of the same clothing. They're all happy people, by and large.
And this wasn't just when you got off
the
airport.
No, this was the welcoming crew.
That's right.
Right. No, this was out and about. In Havana, we had most of our time. We was spent there. We stayed at the National Hotel that was there. And so any free time we had was there. And we had free time. We were able to do whatever we wanted to do. which was a surprise. We thought we would be under, you know, a strict schedule and that you can go to the hotel and don't get out and all that kind of stuff. They've opened all that up. The Cubans can't wait for the Americans to get there. And it's not just for the money part. They want the contact. They've got family. Everybody's got family in Miami. And I think the number two, isn't it, John? The number two import was American dollars into Cuba. And they said the average is $2,000 a month from families in Miami that are sending it to families in Cuba somewhere.
Well, one of the things we had heard, Holly, and most of us haven't seen, was that, for instance, with automobiles, that once the communists took over, whatever it was, late 50s, early 60s, no new automobiles there. And so all these really, really old cars that they just had to keep maintenance on, did you see that?
No,
is that kind
no
of the
new
case?
American cars.
Okay. Yes. All right. No American cars.
Now, the cars that were there were from the 50s mm-hmm. and 60s, the Chevys and the Fairmonts. Was it Fairmont? Names that the gentleman ahead would have really probably been able to help us out, but a lot of names we didn't know about. And they are really cool looking cars. From 100 feet.
Mm-hmm. right.
Then you get 50 feet in, and you think, and then you get right next to it, and you think, oh, wow, that 2x4 is holding that seat up. Wow. You know, it looks great, and they've done a really good job, but there are no parts, or there were no parts.
Right.
So, you know, you look at the car, and then you go around and look at the dashboard, and there would be stuff missing out of the dashboard just because they didn't have it. Or they might have a part from some other car that's in there making it work. It's still a fun thing. It's still fun. Some of the cars are amazing, but there's very few that are 100% pristine. All of them have like a lot of Bondo on them, mm-hmm. and then they've been spray painted or painted. Paul, the gentleman that was kind of in charge of our tour while we were there, said that these cars didn't look so shiny until about 3 months ago.
Mm.
They started putting, now that the Americans are coming, they're going to start putting some time into that. People were all over the cars like they were car shows. Mm-hmm. They're parked, they're not labeled as taxis, but they are. I mean, they'll drive you around or you could go somewhere if you wanted to go. And people were waiting in line to get in, especially the older ones, and get their pictures taken with them. And Cubans make $24 a month. Now, that sounds, oh gosh, that's just horrible. But they've got all of their health care, all of their homes, all of their, what else?
The electricity.
Yeah,
the,
everything's provided for
everything
food.
Provided. Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
You're not going to get fat and sassy on the food, but you're not going to starve to death. And your home is not going to be palatial, but you'll have a roof over your head. Your job, people seem to be happy in their job that they had. They're very proud of their entrepreneurs, which we suddenly realized it was really small businesses. That was what they were calling their small businesses, were mm-hmm. entrepreneurs. And a lot of them were in their homes, and that's roughly spoken. Because some of the homes were back in the, when they had the oil fields and the sugar cane, when the dictators came in, they left. Those people left and went to America. And so those homes were just empty. So then when the dictatorships came in, then they took over all those homes and made them into apartments and all kinds of stuff for people to live in. So they are slowly, very slowly, I mean, this has just happened, starting to open that up for them.
Yep.
To start taking homes, buying homes and so forth, because they weren't allowed to own anything.
Yeah, now they're able to buy and sell property.
Okay.
Which they hadn't been able to.
No,
do.
That just happened. Yeah. So that's all new. They're not real sure about that. But, you know, the wonderful thing about the people were, there would be a doctor and a street sweeper, and they did have street sweepers. Those people are equal. And so it was a really different feeling of the whole place because there was no I'm better than you attitude, you know.
Although I kind of want my doctor better paid than my street sweeper. I'm just saying, if I have to have surgery, I'm a well-paid doctor, or pilot, whatever.
The Cubans, you know, when you look back at their history, they've always kind of been under the rule of somebody, Spanish for a long time and, you know, those things. And then, you know, through the I think the 40s and 50s are such a huge influence from the U.S. that, you know, it really depended upon the U.S. Then after the revolution, which is interesting, they always referred to it as a triumph of the revolution. then, of course, they became very reliant upon Russia. Well, when the Soviet Union fell apart,
that was bad.
Today they had support. Tomorrow they didn't have support.
Overnight.
And they went through periods of famine, you know, energy shortages and all those. And it's really interesting. They call that the special period.
Yeah. There's always a twist.
So then they developed a relationship with Venezuela where they would import the oil. Jeez. They would refine it. They would have energy. They could export that. But in turn, they were providing health care services to Venezuela because their health care system is relatively advanced. you know, and so they were trading, basically trading doctors for oil with Venezuela. And of course, that's kind of changed in the last few years. Mm-hmm. So they're really kind of stuck in a tough spot in that they know they need to open up that, you know, to the U.S., but I think the two governments are going to, you know, kind of posture about, you know, socialism and democracy and what's right and what's not right. And I think once you get below that, you know, that outward facing, what we have to look like to the media and to the countries, maybe, people want to work together.
Are that Jim Lee, the player to be named later in the trade for doctor for oil?
Yeah, right.
I'll be like that.
Yeah, we're sending you there.
Thanks a lot.
We're getting a barrel of oil. Our guest this morning, the owners of Munson Hybrids, John and Holly Hennepin, went on a trip to Cuba. Mainly agricultural in nature, but some other things. And John, you're just telling us off the air something rather interesting as far as architecture. You would think, one, being tropical, two, the Spanish influence, that there would be some really, you know, churches and everything would be kind of cool. But you're saying it really wasn't the case.
Yeah, it was a little surprising. I thought that maybe some of the old churches and some of the, you know, the really old buildings would be have much more personality and look like maybe something more from Europe or from Mexico, with that same Spanish influence, but they're just very, I'll say, plain utilitarian in design, and I was just kind of surprised by that.
Yeah. No color. There's not a lot of color.
No,
really? At all.
No.
Yeah. No. Well, when I think it was Russia came in, they built all these skyscraper type buildings, apartments.
Different shades of gray.
And they are all different shades of gray, not 50.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be the Russian influence, yeah. I would guess.
The cars are the same way. Their cars, the more modern cars, are little square boxy things. They're, you know, for utility use only, and they're all gray.
See any Yugos by chance?
No.
Didn't see any Yugos. You know, the bus that we traveled in was a Chinese bus. It was new,
modern. Very
nice. Yeah, I mean, it was modern. They have a lot of Chinese influence now. And while we were in the hotel, we saw some people that appeared to be Chinese and North Korean military that were there.
Wow.
You know,
they were
so
staying there.
Yeah, that we're staying there. They're on whatever their mission they were up to. But
the problem they have for the tourism part is that they don't have. We know of two hotels that were there: the National and the Malia, which is a new, more modern Mexican.
And this is in Havana.
In Havana.
In Havana.
Yeah, we didn't see hotels any other hotels with that. So the way they're going to be able to have this is the best way to get there, I should say, would be by cruise ship, because you have your own water. They don't even drink their own water. They don't even know. So it's like, okay, so you have water, you have your place to stay, you have food, you have shelter, all that kind of stuff is contained on the ship. That's probably the best way to be able to see it. And a couple days at the most is really all you need to be in Havana.
In Havana.
There's not a whole lot to do. The tourism hasn't even built up yet.
Yeah, so there's really no remnant. We used to hear about, it used to be Havana was a getaway for the stars before Castro took over. So you'd think there was probably something rather ornate there, but it's just not there anymore.
Well, there was, but it's just not there anymore, and they've done some changes.
And it's still the same way it was back in the 50s. You know, it hasn't changed. It hasn't gotten better.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
So,
John and Holly Hennepin, they're the owners of Munson Hybrids, and just went on a recent trip to Cuba. So many interesting things you saw. And one of the things we were just talking off the air a little bit, culturally, that you've got a whole generation or maybe even a couple now that have grown up don't really know they're poor, because that's just the way
it's always
up.
Been.
You had that generation before Castro took over. People with money, people without money, those people with money pretty much got out of there.
Left.
So now you've got people that, that had to be kind of an interesting thing.
And they remember
to see
the old days, but this new generation and generation and a half have no idea what those old days were, just from people talking about it. And those generations, those people are now passing on. So there really isn't a whole lot of older history there. So they have to kind of reinvent the whole thing, you know?
Well, I guess also they don't necessarily see what's going on in the rest of the world. You said, 5% internet penetration? But what about with television?
Well, on the TV, we had CNN on TV.
Oh, really?
So, and they're not ignorant of what's going on because people in Miami communicate with them all the time. They know lots of stuff that's going on. It's the communication barrier, because very few of them speak English. I mean, very few. And that's unusual. Usually when you travel, you know, you'll have a few people who don't, but most people do speak of some sort of English, but they really don't. And so there was a huge language barrier. I mean, you really do need to have someone there that can translate for you, because it's Cuban Spanish.
Right.
You know, so it's a different type of a I guess, a dialect kind of a thing. So, and the other thing that was interesting is you saw every kind of mode of transportation at the same time. On the highway, I took pictures of horse and buggy. Well, people walking, horse and buggy, these old cars. Then you had the Russian cars. Then you had the modern buses that were, like we were traveling all at the same time. It's just amazing to watch.
The stoplights?
Yes.
Yes, they did.
Working ones. I was in Mexico once, and there was a stoplight hanging there, and it was red and green at the same time. So it really wasn't serving a great point.
That was a Mexican flag.
Yeah. Okay. They were saluting the country.
Well, you're talking some about the infrastructure. What about as far as the roads? How were those?
The roads weren't too bad when we traveled out to the one seed supply farm. You know, we're on kind of a six-lane highway. Mm-hmm. Now, not all the lanes were very good, kind of like some of the roads in Illinois.
Yeah, but, I was going to say.
You know, the roads weren't too bad. You know, once you got off that road, they got kind of narrow, and you know, when two buses met, it was a little interesting. But, you know, that part of it's fine. There's one railroad that runs the whole length of the island that supports that. I don't know what kind of shape it was in. Didn't really see any trains moving. You know, they've got a lot of ports, so when they need to move product maybe from one end of the island to the other, it probably goes on a ship and goes that way. So, you know, but the support, Havana has one airstrip. We shared, you know, it takes 2.5 hours to get your luggage off the airplane, and that's before you go through customs or anything. That's the way it is. Now, maybe some of the other areas where they've got the resorts, you know, the Canadians and Europeans can go down there freely. So there are some resorts. We don't know what they're like. Maybe the airports there are better. But in Havana, just plan on 2.5 hours to get your luggage.
Wow.
Let's talk about the agricultural side a little bit. A lot of times we think of Cuba. You mentioned the old sugar cane. We think of tobacco. I mean, the Cuban cigars. Is that still a big part of it down there, John?
Yeah. You know, obviously the tobacco is an important part because as, you know, trade opens up, you know, Cuban cigars will create some hard currency. There's still, you know, a fair amount of sugar cane. Vegetables are really, you know, one of the key things that they're looking at, and then corn. They really seem to be focused. They want to be able to raise more corn to feed animals, and then they want to raise more vegetables so they can feed their people, and then also feed all the tourism people. Mm-hmm. You know, they know they need to have the food that Americans will eat, and you know, a lot of vegetables, what we're used to eating. Maybe at some of the other resorts when you go to the Caribbean. So, you know, they're looking that way, but they just don't have, they're stuck in the 50s in some ways.
Sometimes even in the 30s.
Yeah,
they're planting corn by hand.
Really? The one farm we went to was an organic farm, and they were probably 40 minutes outside Havana. And actually, this gentleman was very well traveled. He'd been around the world, you know, a lot of different places. His parents were professors. He was on the food section cover of, I think it was New York Times recently.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's stuff going on, but, you know, it's all done by hand, about 15 hectares, which is 35, 40 acres. And he was actually trying to form a co-op with some of the neighbors to create more farms like his. You know, right now, I think he said they had about 40% of their income was based off of agritourism. So, you know, there's that sector of it that he's developed. You know, then when you start looking at what we think of more typical agriculture, the second farm we went to was a seed production farm for that province that we're in. Each province has their own farm that has to supply all the seed for that province. I think there's 26, 27 different crops that they had to provide seed for. You know, flowers, vegetables, corn, whatever product, all the seed came through that location. We saw some, was papaya.
Papaya.
That we looked at, mm-hmm. You know, and you never think of papaya seed. But we also had an opportunity to look at some corn, which our group was pretty interested in.
Mm-hmm. 250 bushel?
Oh, yeah. they're dreaming.
Off that 10 hectares, they might get it. They're probably looking at more like 25 bushel per acre. Wow.
It was shocking.
And remember, this was a seed production farm, and I don't know that they produce corn seed there. They may get that from someplace else. Another one of the farms, but they plant open pollinated or three-way, four-way crosses. That farm, all the corn was hand-planted, hand-harvested, hand-weeded. They did use herbicides, but it had been too wet to get some of the spraying done, and they also use insecticides because insects really like tropical climates as well.
I'll bet.
But, you know, even to go in and, you know, there's a couple of guys that were plant breeders in our group, and they're thinking, oh, this hybrid, you know, they're thinking in their mind what they could do to make the yields better, which, you know, we all want that goal too. But, you know, if we increase their yield from 25 to 50, what are they going to do with the corn?
Are they going to put
They don't have storage. They don't have elevators. They don't have trucks. They don't have combines. They don't have tractors. You know, they dry the corn by harvesting it on the ear and putting it out on the ground. And said sometimes they just close down half the road and put it on the road.
On the highway.
Yeah, to dry the corn.
Concrete, you know.
So it sounds like obviously not a self-sustaining country. Where are they importing from, the wheat and livestock?
You know, I think a lot of it comes from South America right now. You know, and we were not probably in the production area that would have the most corn. It was a little farther east on the island than where we were at. So there may be more infrastructure in those areas, but what we saw there wasn't. So I think most of it comes from, you know, corn probably from South America, wheat, Canada maybe. I don't know for sure, and we didn't get into that part of it. You know,
well, and their farming is different. Their farming is just to
subsistence.
Food to feed your people.
Right.
It's not to export it or like we have here in the States.
They're not self-sufficient for their own population, and that's what they really want to get to. And there's a great desire, I believe, from the government to get to that. When in our meetings, they were really focused on how they can grow more corn, more potatoes, and more vegetables.
Yeah.
They weren't worried about a lot of other stuff. And we believe that, you know, if we can teach them in one area, that's going to transfer into other areas. And, you know, they're not going to be growing 250 bushel corn down there anywhere in the near future. The seed production farm that we visited had just gotten a brand new corn planter.
They were so excited.
They were extremely excited. It's a four-row planter.
Wow.
It had
it's
a three-point lift, so it doesn't have any carrying wheels on it. Had fertilizer attachments on it, so you know they're going to put fertilizer in the furrow with the seed or beside it. You know, it was
innovative for them.
Yeah,
totally strange.
They didn't have a 20/20 monitor, and they didn't have downforce gauges and all that stuff. But they went to use it. And the tractors they had, which were 1960s, 70s Russian tractors, three-point hitch wasn't strong enough to lift the planter. So they had to take all the fertilizer attachments off, and then they could use a tractor with that planter. So, you know, things like that, that, you know, we quickly realized that it's not going to be a quick thing to go down there and build a seed plant and have seed production down there in 2 years.
Well, we have to also remember that even though we can, quote, unquote, fix it overnight, they don't want that. They want to do it on their own, and they want help on their level. So I think we as Americans need to be really careful that we don't come out on a cross as overbearing, you know, know-it-alls, even though we could really help them greatly. We need to go at their pace of what they want.
Sure, because you figure the United States built its agriculture the same way back in many years ago.
Yes.
It's got to come from the ground up, literally, in agriculture.
Yes. And they're starting from square one. I mean, completely from square one.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people on the trip had the idea that maybe it'd be kind of like South America, where there would be farms, where there would be some sort of knowledge in what they were doing, and there's really not. And they really hunger for that knowledge on how to be better. We hope that we can get a group from down there back to the U.S. We're hoping in September so they could see some of the harvest, especially on the seed production side, kind of see what the whole seed production part's about, and then to be able to see, you know, some research plots and been back to that education piece. And until, you know, like we were really surprised by their level, and then maybe until they see where we're at in our capabilities before we can really figure out, okay, how can we work together and make something happen?
Is the soil decent?
You know, it looked to be productive. It's red. Some of the guys in the plant breeders that had worked in Hawaii said it looked like a lot like Hawaiian soil.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's productive, and I didn't follow all the math. You know, it's a little bit lost in translation as to how much fertilizer they put on. I thought they said they'll put on, you know, 4 to 6 tons of a, what was it, a 699 or and when you start doing the math, that comes out to a lot of fertilizer, and that surprised me. So I think that's why I think we lost something in translation there.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that was really interesting on the tour of the farm, the seed farm, we actually had the gentleman, Manuel, that was in charge of seed supply for the whole country. And the question came up, how many acres or hectares of corn do you have? He didn't know.
Wow.
He said we'd have to talk to a gentleman that was in a meeting the previous day, because that's his job. But you would think that the gentleman that's in charge of supplying all the corn seed would know how many hectares were being grown, so he'd know how much seed to supply.
But there again, that's part of the confusion people were on our group. Was like, well, why is this? Well, that's part of, if you don't know it all, you can't take over.
Yeah.
And they were very paranoid about the past, about, you know, people getting together and overthrowing the country.
Galesburg's Morning News, talking with the owners of Munson Hybrids, John and Holly Hennepin. Recent trip to Cuba, talking a little bit about the agricultural side of things. What's, you know, I just assume it's a Caribbean island. I assume it's partly mountainous, and obviously there must be a little bit of flat land that they do some farming on.
Yeah, and our trips out of Havana, we're on the first farm. It was kind of in what I'd call some hill country. It was not flat.
Beautiful.
His fields that he was growing vegetables in were all kind of terraced and stone walls and those types of things. Then when we got out to the seed production farm, that was in much more of a flat area. But as we were traveling, you could see the mountains, as they referred to them, off in the distance. So, yeah, I believe that there's a mountain range that runs down along the one or through the island, but we did not get into that part of it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know statistically how much you gathered as far as population. What are they looking at down there? And any ideas, roughly?
You know, we didn't talk a lot about that in our meetings. You know, we were centered on the agriculture and that part of it, so
Crowded in, like, a van, I assume? Or
it didn't seem crowded.
It didn't seem real crowded.
It seemed like smaller than the cities we have.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty open. There would be a lot of people waiting at bus stops, and the buses were really crowded.
Talk about that on the road, John.
We're driving out in the country to the farm, and there'd be people holding out a few pesos, any bills. Vehicle, especially bus that came by, hoping the bus would stop and pick them up. Because you'd hold some money out so you'd show that you were going to pay for your ride, and then somebody would stop and give
you
a ride.
They're hitchhiking. They call them hitchhikers.
They're hitchhikers.
Only they're paying for it. They're not going for free.
Yeah. So, I would recommend anybody that has an opportunity to go down to do that. As Holly mentioned, you're not going to find a five-star hotel like we think of them.
And there's not a lot to do. I mean, you can't even rent a car. You have to rent a driver because you can't. There's no cars to rent.
Uber, they've got Cuber, right?
Yes, they do.
Nice.
And we can't really speak to what the resorts are like because we didn't go there. But
there's
from what I understand, it's not like going to Mexico. And so that part of it is probably going to be a while. You know, Westin signed a deal to have, I think, five resorts, and as we understand it, they're basically just managing them. You know, I think the government maybe kind of owns them with the investment that Westin made to build them. But Westin will manage them and then create, value out of that for them. But
maybe a way of getting their foot in the door.
Yeah, kind of a down
payment.
And,
I was impressed on the agriculture side. They said that they thought that if we could come up with a proposal for a project, they could probably get it turned around in 60 days to get that approved.
Now, we're not sure that's accurate.
And,
guide said, that's dreaming.
But, with that proposal, if we wanted to go down and grow seed corn, you would have to, you'd have to import everything. So it's not like, there's not the infrastructure there so it's going to be a huge, huge project.
If you get an opportunity to go, the best chance is probably going to be on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
That's probably, because it's still not open. We had to get permission to go. And so we got passports punched, which was nice. But you have to still have permission. You have to have a reason to go. And then you have to get okayed to go. That's why we didn't know till last minute that we were going to be able to go.
Uh-huh. One of the interesting things you told us off the air in your travels, they don't have, like we've got the White House. That's where the president lives. You went past land. You saw the house where Raul Castro actually lives. But nobody knows where Fidel.
We didn't see the house. They said, here's the gate. And all these trees, this is the area, but nobody knows where the house is on that property either.
But nobody at all knows where Fidel's at.
No. Correct. Nobody knows where his house is.
Now, according to Paul, who's been back and forth for 25 years, says he is still alive. His birthday.
Be 90.
90, just probably this week already. Yeah. He says, and nobody knows really much about that other than he is still alive. But I don't know how much influence he has over Raul, which is his brother.
Yeah.
Many times we think of Latin America, Mexico City, and now Brazil with the Olympics in Rio. They talk about the horrible conditions in some of these shanty towns and the extreme poverty. Did you see any of that? I mean,
no, because they're all equally poor.
Okay.
But it's the level, it's not, you didn't see the shanty poor, you just saw the common people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it wasn't poor living. It may not have been fancy. Mm-hmm. Some of the places in the city where we were walking by don't have windows because it's, you know, it's an extremely hot culture
sure.
or country. And so the only thing they have is shutters on the windows to keep the rain out when it's the rainy season, which is when we're there during the summertime, it's the rainy season. And when you looked in the windows, there'd be a big TV, like always, and then just very sparse. I mean, they didn't have all the tchotchkes, and they didn't have stuff. They weren't mm-hmm. surrounded by stuff like we Americans are. They just had, you know, I might have had a picture of a family maybe a couple little things, but that was it. It was the furniture was very simple and
you know, and if you saw them sitting out on the front porch in the evening, they might be sitting on a bucket.
Yeah.
You know, but they were seemingly happy. I mean,
music was
cool.
Yeah. The music was really neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not just running to Walmart or Target or
Walmart or Castroville. No, they're hanging out visiting, you know, on porches and stuff. Because, first of all, there's no air. Many places did not have air conditioning. Yeah. So it's hot. So they're sitting outside. They're visiting with people. It's remember how the 50s, or how mm-hmm. we were told the 50s were? Because we're not mm-hmm. that old, right, guys?
Right.
There you go.
Yeah. But it was like that. I mean, people sitting on porches, not like our white cladded homes with porches, but they mm-hmm. had, you know, a little veranda or a little area in front of their house where people were sitting and visiting. They played dominoes. I got to play with the domino guys.
Yeah, Holly jumped into a domino
game. Oh, boy, was that
really?
Wild.
Yeah.
They moved real fast.
Well, that's something that's big in Miami, isn't it? I was thinking
that. Yeah, well, sure, it would be.
Cuban culture.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And what
yeah.
was interesting, the guys that were playing dominoes looked like they didn't have anything. One was a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
One was a lawyer. And two of them were what he referred to as hustlers.
Hustlers.
So I think that meant they had a lot of stuff going on the street.
Right, yeah. right.
But it wasn't, you know, it's not like they, you know, they're part of a club. You had to be a member of the club to play.
Wow.
And they didn't make Holly pay to
join.
But
thank heavens. I entertained them, I think, for a while going, oh my gosh, this is going so fast.
Crazy Americans.
I mean, it was super fast. It was literally this fast. You know, I'm like, okay.
Anything like giant mosquitoes or anything like that, any different you noticed in any other Caribbean or
you know, very few
tropical
bugs. Very few bugs.
Because they don't have screens on their windows, so they must not have an issue with that.
Yeah, I mean, when we were out around the hotel a couple of evenings, you didn't notice any bugs.
Uh-uh.
Now, in the cornfield, we noticed plenty of bugs.
Well,
you know, corn borer, earworm, all those good things. But army worm.
It doesn't matter where you go. They
are everywhere.
Yeah.
All right. Well, John and Holly, thanks so much for taking some time with us. What a neat story and a great experience.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
It was
quite
once
a privilege.
In a lifetime.
We're very excited to be able to get to do this.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Nice to meet you guys.
Galesburg's Morning News with Tom Meredith and Jim Lee.